Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, hello there. A preprint study of adolescents conducted during Thailand's national COVID-19 vaccination campaign showed what one physician described as a stunning association between myocarditis and Pfizer biotech vaccine. A prospective study in Thailand conducted during the country's national COVID-19 vaccination campaign for adolescents showed what one physician described as a stunning association between myocarditis and Pfizer. The preprint accepted for publication in a peer-reviewed journal involved 314 participants ages 13 to 18 who were healthy and without abnormal symptoms after receiving their first vaccine dose. Participants with a history of cardiomyopathy, tuberculosis, pericarditis, or constrictive pericarditis, and severe allergic reaction to the COVID-19 vaccines were excluded from the study. Although the study included 314 adolescents, 13 were excluded from the findings as they were lost to follow-up. Of the 301 remaining participants, 202, or 67%, were male. Researchers found that 18% of the 301 teens analyzed had an abnormal electrocardiogram, or EKG. After receiving their second dose of Pfizer, 3.5% of males developed myocarditis, or subclinical myocarditis. Two were hospitalized and one was admitted to the ICU for heart problems. Cardiovascular adverse events observed during the study included 7.64% shortness of breath, 6.64% palpitation, 4.32% chest pain, 4.32% hypertension, 3.54 adolescents had abnormal electrocardiograms. After vaccination, 3 patients had minimal pericarditis effusion with findings compatible with subacute myocarditis, and 6 patients experienced mitral valve prolapse. These are a lot of million-dollar words up in here, huh? Myocarditis is inflammation of the heart muscle that can lead to cardiac arrhythmia and death, according to National Organization for Rare Disorders. Myocarditis can result from infections, but more commonly, the myocarditis is a result of the body's immune reaction to the initial heart damage. Okay, well, let me scroll down. More young deaths are getting reported. A 38-year-old woman today in the Post. I saw a wife. She was a wife of an athlete. No cause of death listed. These famous ones leak through, and there are enough of those to be alarming. Another video crops up of a young couple driving through the small town graveyard of their hometown, counting over 90 fresh plots and becoming exasperated that they've never seen anything like this. The stories are out there, as is the reality of what this is and what it has been. But still some hang on to the shoestring of hope, carrying too much weight that the government and Big Pharma could not have been complicit in this level of evil, and continue to campaign against study after study of evidence like this, and mountains of reports and strange deaths piling on top of each other like a mass grave. This disconnect between reports such as this, which are the tip of an ever-increasing iceberg, and the fact that these injections are somehow safe, grow wider and wider by the day. They should, of course, already be pulled off the market, as Dr. Peter McCullough said on my show this week, with a statement of some kind of apology. The fact that they are not is extra pressure on the psychological war that is being waged these days by COVID and the demolition of America and the freedoms of the world stripped away along with the health of many. Psychological health, physical, mental, and spiritual of most humanity at this point is under extremes like we've never seen before. To put it another way, it makes no sense. And that in and of itself begins to feel like a tactic as the months and years of this rage on. Even pointing it out over and over again becomes wearing, like looking at a particularly gruesome funhouse mirror where the world used to be. It's a nightmare that you live through and get used to, and getting used to it is necessary for survival, but I wonder how healthy it is in the long term. The conversation is decided by both participants within, and the conversation we are having is becoming more fragmented and ludicrous all the time. I've got no idea what the solution is, and it seems nobody else does either. One side sees through it and keeps saying as much. The other side doesn't and keeps their heads in the sand. the insults from that side have certainly died down, and more have obviously woken up than gone to sleep. So that is telling. But still, the fact that this conversation still goes on, the conversation that these injections should still be taken seriously, I mean, when the evidence is in and ringing loudly and clearly, they are massively injurious and even deadly and ineffective on top of that. If ever there was a 1+1=2 equation, it's this. I cannot see it now. And yet the conversation looms on. It is enough to drive you a little bit loopy. Thank God the rollout for the young children was a disaster in terms of numbers. Most haven't subjected. They're very young to this. But the fact that they tried is enough to make you pull your hair out. You can't go mental, obviously, but still, it's best to remain agitated and engaged until the madness stops. Don't get too used to it. Don't let them wear you down to the point where you ever accept this type of madness as sanity. All right, you can email me, josepharthur@tntradio.live. Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website, submit your event details, and we'll get the word out on TNT Radio.
Checking off the boxes.
Established, reputable.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
God bless America.com. Timothy Shea from MAGAInstitute.com. Everything's a .com, baby. God bless America.com. The MAGAInstitute.com. Timothy Shea. Everything's a .com, baby. What are we doing with our world? Timothy Shea. What are we doing with our world.com, baby? What's up, Timothy? How are you, sir?
Joseph Arthur is the only TNT host you need to listen to. I figured I'd give you a song back, man. Living the dream, baby. I'm with the traveling circus here.
So tell me, so you're with Clay Clark and that whole wild crew, huh? What are you guys doing? Describe the situation out there on the road for us, stuck in our domiciles.
Yeah, first of all, it's a lot of fun. You got to come out to the one in Pennsylvania. It's going to be the third week in October. You really should come to one of these. All our buddies are here. Mel Kay, she sends her love. Dr. Brian Artis, he sends his love. So it's for us, it's like, you know, if you're with the Traveling Road Show, it's like a family reunion every month. Right. And for the people in the towns we come to, it's like the circus comes to town, right? So you got the George Soros paid protesters downtown. In fact, I don't think these people are actually smart enough to realize they could be getting a paycheck. I think they're just like so far gone that they think that they're doing this to save the country.
Are they protesting you guys?
Oh yeah, because you've got the media outside the fence pointing their cameras in, and the reporters doing a stand up using that concerned face. You know the concerned face that news reporters use
when I was raised something's with very troubling. Face, dude. I know the concerned face, bro. I get the concerned face.
I'm leaving tonight, and there's this black guy from the local Channel 4 in Rochester, and he's up there. He's got the concerned face on, Joseph, and something very, you know, the racist, homophobic, Reawaken America tour. It's like, yeah, dude, there's nothing but peace, love, and patriotism on inside. We had four generation family. We talked to a grandmother today. She had her mother with her, right? Her daughter and her grandchildren. So there were four generations of the same family. Everybody's loving on everybody. Five out of the seven pastors that are regulars on the tour are black, so I don't know where they're getting their racism thing. It's just they're grasping at straws trying to keep us divided, and people are coming together. Like Naomi Wolf is waking up, and we've talked about this before, and Bill Maher and Russell Brand and people like that. It's like, okay, you're getting it. It isn't left versus right. It's us versus them.
Did you read Naomi Wolf's book? I started reading that this week. It's excellent. Highly recommend it. Bodies of Others.
I got to get a copy of it. I've read some of the articles she's written, but I haven't read her book yet.
Yeah, get the audio and listen to it at 1 1/4 speed. He reads a little slow, so the 1 1/4, perfect.
That's perfect. Awesome.
But okay, so what's the purpose of this thing? This is the Reawaken America tour, but you're saying it's been it kind of got relabeled. What is it, the Great Reset versus the Great Awakening? And that's really exactly. Smart because that is the battle here. And I kind of was alluding to it in what I read in the beginning, which is just like, how is this question even looming on? And the fact that it is looming on is in and of itself a tactic. It's a crazy making tactic because it's like the results are in. It doesn't work. It's crazily injurious. There's so many weird deaths we're seeing, young people, like just it's obvious what's going on. And we still have to kind of skirt around this issue, except for on places like TNT. But I mean, it's just like, what gives? And the idea of reawakening versus the Great Reset is perfect because people need to wake up before too much more of this Great Reset is implemented or else it'll be too late.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was a breaking story that you didn't read at the top of the hour. It's in a related story. A Philippine researcher was involved in a single car accident, a fatal single car accident. You know, the guy that did that study showing, look, the data are in. They are conclusive. I'm saying this as a scientist, right? In science, if you have 95%, if you have no more than 5% variation, it's called a 95% confidence interval, meaning that it's real and not artifact. The data are in. They are conclusive. This thing is toxic. It is a murder weapon at this point. And yet, we have fearless Fuhrer Fauci on making jokes with Joe Scarborough about cooking up COVID in his kitchen with meatballs. Meanwhile, Scarborough's entire audience was wearing masks. You know, the gaslighting is just unrelenting. It's
phenomenal.
And it's like, what point? But people are still buying it, man. People are still listening to Stelter. They're still listening to these clowns.
It's really weird, man. In and of itself, it's kind of crazy making. I think it's really part of the psychological war that we're under. You know,
it's mass formation psychosis. It's 100% mass formation psychosis.
But it kind of is a flex that no matter how overwhelming the evidence is, that A, this thing obviously doesn't work. It's not effective. Everyone who's getting COVID is like quadruple boosted and all the rest of it. And of course, some people that aren't injected get it too. But, you know,
but my thesis is they don't have COVID. They've got vaccine injuries. Their bodies are producing the spike proteins. Right. They don't have COVID. They've got vaccine.
Right. Probably. I mean, so it's ineffective and it's and really people, difficult the way, to hide the injuries and the death as well. So it's very dangerous. So it's just, let me just like, close why the loop is on this that. Even a question?
Right. Let me just close the loop on that for a second. I think the people that have been injected aren't getting COVID. They're having a poisoning from the spike proteins that their own bodies are manufacturing. And the people that aren't jabbed, that are getting quote unquote COVID, I think they're getting poisoned by the spike proteins being shed by the people in close proximity to them that are jabbed. Right. So let's say your wife got jabbed and you didn't, and you come down with quote unquote COVID. Well, is it really a virus or are you reacting to the spike proteins that your wife is shedding? Because she's still manufacturing them. Yeah. Everybody that got the jab is now a genetically modified organism.
Yeah. And there's no off switch on those spike proteins. And none. That's what some people theorize that monkeypox is that as well, an autoimmune reaction to the vaccines.
No, I think monkeypox is real, but I think it's been introduced. I think they're absolutely amplifying it. Monkeypox has been around forever, right? It's just like chickenpox. And I think all of a sudden it's like, okay, what do we need? We got an election to steal. What are we doing? We're running out of options. There's this thing in West Africa called monkeypox. We can go get somebody there infected and get it out into Western countries, and maybe that'll do it. I totally don't put that past them. You sound like a crazy conspiracy theorist until you start until you look back in history at all the things they have done. Okay, if we were in the 40s talking about how they were giving Tuskegee Airmen, not Tuskegee Airmen, but people at, right. in the research study, Tuskegee Institute, they were giving them syphilis and not treating the syphilis. They knew that the guys had syphilis and they didn't treat it. We would say, oh, that's just conspiracy theory, right? The government actually did that.
At this point, to question anything at all, or to question anything the mainstream media says, gets you called a conspiracy theorist, a racist, and a homophobe. It's the trifecta. Right. It's like you're just not allowed to question anything without those insults being hurled your way. Let's go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your take on this FBI raid, because that hadn't happened yet the last time we talked. So I'm excited to hear your perspective on that incredible situation. We'll be right back with Timothy Shea from MAGAInstitute.com right after these words on TNT.
You should hear what Jesse Zerowell is talking about.
The Biden administration plans to declare the monkeypox outbreak a public health emergency in an effort to galvanize awareness and unlock additional flexibility and funding to fight the virus's spread. So it seems that round two of another viral delusion is underway. There are so many things to say about this. One of them being that while they say there are over 6,000 confirmed cases, I have yet to see anybody in the news who's been confirmed to be infected with monkeypox.
Jesse Zerowell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I was drawn to the Navy by my sense of adventure. I'm a writer, so if it's the crew's job to look after the ship, then it's my job to look after the crew. It's pretty amazing. Being in charge of pay and allowances is really important, and I love it because they're incredible people. And helping them with personal matters, you really see the positive effect of what you do. There's nothing more rewarding than that. I was born in Beckenham, but I was made in the Royal Navy. Start your journey. Search Made in the Royal Navy.
Emergency, police, fire, or ambulance?
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Police, fire, or ambulance?
I could see a whole lot of smoke.
What town are you calling from?
I'm on a mobile phone.
I need the town.
Yeah, there it is. I can see flames. There's a kid or something at the window.
Yes, okay.
You guys are better out. Serious.
Hello?
000's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. If you stay focused and just answer the prompted questions, you'll get help faster. The radio station everyone is talking about, TNT, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening. Keep listening. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right, we're the talk of the town, and a large part of that is because of my guest here, Timothy Shea from MAGAInstitute.com. So the FBI raid, it's interesting the way they're converting that into painting Republicans as sort of dangerous extremists that are, you know, hell-bent on terrorism and civil war. It's wild the way the propaganda works. What's your take on that whole exercise that's gone down, and where is it going, Timothy?
Well, it's absolutely wild, but before we get into it, I just want to give a shout-out to the station because, you know, TNT Radio, right, it's explosive, right? TNT is an explosive, but it's Today's News Talk. Mm-hmm. But they got a new tagline, or at least if they've been using it, I haven't seen it, lighting the fuse for freedom. I mean, like, you want to call us domestic terrorists? Boom, we're going to take that, and we're going to light the fuse for freedom. And I love alliteration, but I just saw that because I sent somebody the link for the show tonight so they could listen in, right? And it comes up TNT Radio, Today's News Talk, lighting the fuse for freedom. And I love that. That's the attitude we've got to have. Look, my favorite moment.
It's an information war, bro.
It is, absolutely. It's we got to go on the offensive.
You know, it's an information war, and you know, we become frontline soldiers, Rastafar soldiers. I don't know what I was trying to make a Bob Marley song out of it, but go ahead. Give us your take on this crazy FBI thing. Buffalo soldiers, that's the one. Go ahead.
So, my favorite moment from the week was Ted Cruz with the huge blow up of the FBI memo that had the Gonzalez flag on it, which, if people don't know, it's a light brown flag with the black cannon barrel, not the wheels of the cannon, just the barrel, and it says come and take it underneath. And it's an FBI memo that says that is an extremist, a violent extremist symbol. And Ted takes off his custom cowboy boots. He takes one of them off, puts it up on the desk, and he goes, Director Ray, on the, well, first he baits him in. Is that a violent extremist? Yes, that's one of the violent extremist symbols. Blah, blah, blah. So he takes off his boot. He says, I wear these to the United States Senate every day. They've got the Gonzalez flag on the back of them. I had them specially made. Am I a violent extremist? And you should have seen how fast Ray tried to backpedal. It was beautiful. So good on Ted for that.
Yeah.
You know,
well, Ray was gaslighting him, though. Ray was like, I'm not familiar with this list, so I'd have to, like, I can't really. I mean, it was total gaslighting. It was
total.
He was kind of sitting there accusing him of being a conspiracy theorist. Basically, he was like, you're Alex Jones over there, sir. You know?
Yeah, we're all Alex Jones, right? We all need to channel our inner Alex Jones. So
a little bit.
You know what a honey trap is, right? So you got a good looking girl in a room lined with cameras, and you get the politician to come in. Now all of a sudden you got blackmail. That's literally how the FBI started. J. Edgar Hoover started the FBI by blackmailing the president, and he was able to stay in power longer than any federal employee ever, except for Anthony Fauci, because he blackmailed every single president under whom he served. Meanwhile, he's out in parties in Washington, D.C., making people call him Mary. Because he's wearing a dress, right? So J. Edgar was a freak, but he stayed in power by blackmailing everybody, which the fact that Anthony Fauci has actually been employed in the same job longer than Hoover was leads you to wonder what Fauci's been blackmailing people with, right? So this whole thing, my take on this is that it was a Trump-run honey trap because, they've been asking for the documents for a long time. These have been subject to negotiation. There was no reason for the warrant. There was no reason for the raid. So I think that Trump set them up. I really honestly do this. This isn't hopium. I'm not saying he's Geodis, you know, God Emperor of the U.S. I honestly think
you were saying a little bit. You're saying he's Yoda.
No, but I think he induced. I think he's playing 6D chess underwater, man.
6D chess, because, bro. That's like,
right. Because look. You know the proof of the pudding. You know it proves my thesis.
What?
He had the video in the can, ready to roll Monday night, man. He comes out with this beautiful, highly produced campaign style video about the raid. And on Tuesday, he raises more money than any politician has raised in a 24-hour period ever.
Now, listen, that's what I've been saying it all week. It's like, unless they arrest him or say they found something really damning, they've given him the keys to the kingdom, basically. Or they've at least given
CNN
him
even
the best
that.
Ad campaign money. CNN even said that? Is that right?
There were two people on CNN saying, well, if you know, it looks like they might have overstepped. And this woman comes in next to him and says,
right,
if they do not find evidence of a serious crime, if this doesn't go beyond some minor National Archives rules, they not only have given the nomination to Donald Trump, they've given him the presidency. And that was on CNN. So everybody's freaking out, which is why all of a sudden the news story is he had nuclear secrets. He's trying to build a bomb and Pompeii.
Right.
It's like, come on,
I saw that too. Yeah, I mean, for one, it puts him front and center of the news cycle, like, you know, up in neon lights, and it's going to drone on for a while. So there's just tons of attention, basically. And it's like it just gives him to run with the narrative that now America is a banana republic in the way that they're handling sort of ex-leaders and with the economy. I mean, it's just like the rallies write themselves now. Let's put it, it's not like he was going to have too much of a problem with the rallies before, but now there's a focal point. Plus, it makes him a sympathetic character to a lot of people that like he's being sort of chased down by the globalists and all that. So, I mean, it just plays into his brand better than anything money could have bought.
It also wakes up people on the left that actually do care about civil liberties. This was my hot take on it on Facebook was this is going to be their bridge too far. If, for people that don't know, there was Operation Market Garden was an operation, an Allied operation in at the end of World War II when they were about to invade Germany, and they wanted to get to Germany through the Netherlands and up the Rhine River that enters into the ocean from the Netherlands. So that was the thing. But they bogged down, the soil was soft and the tanks bogged down before they could get that last bridge. and they needed that last bridge, the bridge over the Rhine, in order to be able to go into Germany. Well, so there's a great movie people can look at it called A Bridge Too Far.
Yeah,
this is good. And I posted Ryan O'Neill, and there's like Telly Savalas, and one of those cast of hundreds, right? Yeah, Telly Savalas was the cigar chopping tank sergeant. It was just great. But it's one of those things, just everybody's in it. It's a great movie, Bridge Too Far. And I posted, this is going to be the Bridge Too Far in their little Operation Market Garden, because they tried to, they thought they could pull a fast one. And I think Trump knew they were coming, headed them off at the pass, and actually turned it to his advantage.
Well, okay, so how did he know they were coming? And then you, when you say a honey trap, you make it seem like they induced, that he induced
them to raid. I think Trump induced them to do it, because they've been...
How would he do that?
Okay, so here's the timeline. He took the documents in January of 2020, right? 2 months later, National Archives asked for the documents. There's been negotiations with the National Archives ever since. This summer, National Archives asked DOJ to get involved. DOJ got involved. There were negotiations with Trump. They said, okay, you can keep these until it's resolved. They're in a locked storeroom, but we want an extra padlock on that. Trump said, okay. So there was an extra padlock on the door in Mar-a-Lago where they were secured. So this has been going on for a long time. It's not like all of a sudden they discovered 15 boxes were missing and we've got to go get them in emergency order, right? So how come it's required that the judge, Judge Reinhold, had to recuse himself from Trump versus Hillary et al. This June because of either a conflict of interest or personal bias? So he had to recuse from that case in June, and yet he's competent to sign a search warrant in August. I think by stonewalling them, he induced them into coming after them, and he was ready. He had the video already. He had all the Republicans had the same talking points. They were all out within minutes of this, all saying the same thing. It's like, for once, we actually did what we're supposed to do, which is what the left does every time. Okay, give everybody the talking points, circle the wagons, present a unified front. For once, Republicans weren't shooting at each other. They were all shooting out. They circled the wagons, and they were all shooting out for a change. I really think Trump tripped them into this.
Okay, let me go to headlines. I got a couple more questions about this, but we'll see what happens when we come back after the headlines on TNT.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Author Salman Rushdie was stabbed on stage in upstate New York 33 years after he was threatened with death by Iran for writing the book Satanic Verses. Donald Trump claims it is a hoax to suggest FBI agents were looking for documents related to nuclear weapons. Thames Water has texted customers in North London, Oxfordshire, and Surrey warning them of low pressure, dry taps, and rationed bottled water if they need it.
If you miss your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Steve Beeman is joining us from the Aloe Vera Club. Something about the metaverse and rearranging your businesses. Timothy Shea is gonna help us break it on down with Steve Beeman. Welcome to the show. What's up, Steve? Are you with us?
I am, and thank you for having me on tonight.
Thanks for coming on. So we were just talking about Trump, and Timothy reckons that he kind of set a honey trap for the FBI and coaxed them into giving him the best sort of ad campaign money can buy, that he's up against a banana republic and a controlled demolition of America from the administration that's currently running things. What's your take on all this? And then we'll get into some of your Aloe Vera Club and all that you're bringing about in this world.
Well, I thank you for that. And I guess really all I can say about the Trump issue is that it boosted his voter base by a ton. So if the administration thought they were going to hurt him, they've energized the right wing of the party a lot. And people are responding, even in the middle of the party, you know, the Lindsey Grahams of the world coming out and just being totally disgusted with this. This was a mistake of gargantuan proportion.
That's why I think there has to be more to it. Unless they just are dumb as doornails, or Timothy is right and it was a honey trap set by Trump and Trump is playing 25D chess, which is like possible, well, maybe, I guess. But to me, it seems like we're not done with this story yet, that they could say they find something really damning or an arrest is made, something like this that cobbles him. Because otherwise, they've just basically handed the keys over in a way.
Well, and so, I do think what you just said is what's the goal here. I think they're going to try to get an indictment against him so that he can't run again.
Right.
But that is going to – so if that happens – and I think it'll depend who he turns over the reins to. But if he turns them over, for example, to DeSantis with his blessing, you'll see voters coming out like never before.
Oh, yeah. DeSantis is like Trump Mach 2 in a way. I mean, I think DeSantis is kind of Trump without the baggage. But I don't know. I've kind of like, I think Trump, gets back out there and does his rallies, especially with this new fuel. It's going to be an unstoppable force. Final thoughts on this, Timothy? I'll let you have the last word on this, and we'll get into what Steve's doing.
Yeah, no, I think you wrapped it up nicely, Joseph.
Oh, darn it. I wanted some more insightful stuff, but I guess we covered it. So, Steve, what's going on? What is this? Well, for one, Timothy was telling me about what you're doing, and when he said metaverse, that had my interest piqued, because I spend a lot of time on the old NFT realm, and I'm developing an NFT project myself. So I'm a big fan of Web3 and, basically also just like the utility that comes with it. This is what I love about it. Like if you release, say, a music or an art project, that you can offer utility, you can offer the people that buy into what you're offering, they can then consider it investment property as well. If the whole industry rises, then everybody's a partner in it. This is like, to me, the future of commerce and of content, basically. It seems rather obvious. So how are you applying that with this Aloe Vera Club?
Well, let me touch on that. But before I say anything, all I want to hear is more of that guitar music, because I really appreciated that. I love that intro.
Okay, cool. I'll give you another one before we're done here.
All right. But in a bottom line way, I believe we are leaving behind in the ash heap of history what you might think of as industrial capitalism. And we're moving into digital capitalism, which is the very essence of the blockchain and all that brings to bear for people. So the idea that the Aloe Vera Club is doing is building a safe, frictionless economy for small business. We are wrapping everything up in a, metaverse, because that's a great place to interact. That's just a tool. But at the core of it is the blockchain with smart contracts and the ability for businesses to conduct commerce within that world, all in a safe and secure and fully protected way.
Now, are you inventing a coin as well? This is what a lot of NFT projects do. They have utility. They offer coin, like Bored Ape Yacht Club has Ape Coin, which then gets listed and blows up as well. And so if you wanted to go into the Bored Ape Yacht Club ecosystem and you don't have, I don't know what they cost now, 90 ETH, you can just buy a little bit of Ape Coin and you're in. Is it a similar thing that you're planning on?
We are planning on a tokenization of this process, but it is only going to have value within the universe itself, so that it will be a transitory coin to do business from one business to another within the universe. So it is a fully enclosed economy.
So it won't be listed on Uniswap, basically, but it'll have a token ID. Oh, okay. Because these things have a way of accumulating value outside of their ecosystems.
We really are just creating Aloe Vera to be the small business ecosystem. There are 33 million businesses. We're going to do everything we can to bring as many of them into this so they can conduct business in this new world of digitized economies. And they can do it, again, on a safe, secure, and frictionless way.
And so it's an onboarding for a lot of things that maybe small business owners won't have their head around or won't have time to get their head around, because this is a whole other aspect of business life that you're going to need to know in the modern world, but takes an extreme learning curve, really. So you're sort of doing all the heavy lifting and then inviting them into this ecosystem. Is that correct?
I think you get it crystal clear. And I was having a nice talk earlier with Tim about it. And I think the extent to which we can sit here and understand this, there is a whole segment that will be left behind if they don't. So we're trying to bring the small business community up to speed and bring them into what can be scary because they don't understand it. But the blockchain democratizes capital in a beautiful way. And one of the statistics I often tell people is that 1997, we had 6,500 public companies. Today, we only have 3,000. And the kind of result of that is that wealth is being more and more concentrated in the hands of the wealthy. Because all the companies now, instead of, like, you take Apple Computer, go back, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when they went public, instead of them going public in today's world, which shares their ability to grow and share that wealth, they're going to be bought by a private equity company that just focuses capital in their hands. So I think the blockchain and all that it entails, and what we're trying to do at Elevare, democratizes capitalism once again where it needs to be.
Well, Web3 is meant to be decentralized, and it is meant to give everybody sort of, you know, even footing. The realm that I'm most familiar with on it is NFTs. And in that realm, the decentralization is kind of failing to a degree because you have Yuga Labs, which is Bored Ape, and they're like the top project across the board by quite a long way. There are other ones that are, you know, are big, but they are dominating. So you're seeing the same things that happen in society happen on the blockchain. The other thing great about the blockchain is it's immune to censorship, which is huge.
Completely. But one of the things we're doing to be a little different than the traditional ones is we are creating the Elevare Club in what's known as a DAO, or one of these fully distributed autonomous organizations. So that, unlike the ability to consolidate power into one person, we are distributing the entire operations of the club through the DAO, so that it is a fully distributed everything, not just economy, but management and governance and everything else.
And so people will have a token or an NFT that is their sort of membership pass to this universe?
Correct. And then within the universe itself, they'll transact business through smart contracts using the Elevare tokens.
And so, okay, so the tokens won't have monetary value outside of the ecosystem, but the NFT that is their inroad will act as a kind of metaverse version of a business that they're building that they could then sell once the Elevare Club accumulates, you know, much more value, then they'll have this investment that they've invested in, basically.
It's fascinating to speak with you because I rarely talk to people who understand it so clearly, but you absolutely have a crystal clear understanding of what we're doing.
Yeah, that's the future of business right there, because that's what's so amazing about it is it just works across the board. Like, I look at it like this, like, say I want to release I relate it to music, and I have these concepts going on in my head right now, which I'm trying to facilitate, which is, okay, I'm going to release a bunch of new music. I want to create an NFT aspect of it. And then, you know, that takes the Web3 sort of, community into Discord. I want that to then become about all of us helping overcome our artistic limitations. And then, so like, that's the whole premise of it as well, is community. See, that's the thing people don't realize when they think of NFTs. They think, oh, it's a JPEG. I could right click, save it. Yeah, you could. That's not really what people are buying. What people are buying is a token, and a token that gives you an inroad to a community. And that's really the appeal. And so it's part degenerate gambling, part investment property. In your case, it's not so much the gambling, it's a business concept, but it's also community. What will the community spirit of this project be like? And will you have like a Discord where people can then help each other along in their businesses?
Well, and that is the key to it, because it is the community that we're after. We want these communities to step up and provide capital to their other small business communities. Again, it's crowdfunding on a new level.
Yeah.
I think there's so much that can be done. And as I was talking earlier today, I believe that the American dream, which is this transitory ability to grow up with nothing but become something, I think that is under fire in America. overregulation, overtaxation, and all of that is causing it to really change. And this restores it. And so that's why we're so excited about it.
This does threaten to restore it. I won't go that far because I think the government's zeroing in on it. Let's talk about that on the other side of the next break, though. I want to go deeper into it and find out exactly what you're offering the communities that come into your organization. And then also what your feeling is about the government and how they're going to take to the blockchain and people really finding independence. Because clearly, let me put my tinfoil hat on real quick. Clearly, there's an agenda to prevent people from becoming sort of autonomous and powerful in today's day and age. It seems like there's a real drive to subjugate people and control them. And this flies in the face of that dramatically. So I don't think they're just going to let it happen. So I'm curious as to your point of view that let's listen to that on the other side of this break. We'll be back with Timothy Shea and Steve Beeman after these words on TNT.
We're saved. A professor has found the root cause of climate change. And you guessed it, white supremacy. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio. Stay tuned.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Dr. Jacqueline Gill of the University of Maine has now claimed that, quote, the root causes of climate change are capitalism, white supremacy, colonialism. Gill is an associate professor of paleoecology and plant ecology at the University of Maine. If Dr. Gill is correct, the only solution is for the whole world to go Marxist. Yes, that's right. Give up your freedoms, your rights, and listen to the centrally planned economy. But here's the catch. Even if we give up all our freedoms to fight the alleged climate crisis, the weather and climate will not notice. This professor joins two NASA scientists in claiming the same thing, that white supremacy is a driver of climate change. Yes, all a day's work in the wacky world of climate. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture, the right to know about the economy, the right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
If you want the jibby jab, all right, enough, then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The Oliver Club is a community-led business on the blockchain to liberate you from the chain gang. Oh yeah, the Oliver Club is a business that exists out on the blockchain to free you from the chain gang. Oh yeah. So what do you think, man? Are they going to let you get away with this, Steve? Are they going to, is this going to alarm them? What's the future of the blockchain and the government and 87,000 new IRS agents that are Agent Smiths armed with deadly force? Are you afraid? Well, what do you think?
You and I, first of all, we don't get afraid. We just move forward. But I think you and I share the discomfort with the government throwing 87,000 new armed IRS agents at the small business community. And that's exactly right. Where they're going. But with regard to the blockchain, I don't think, regardless how hard they start and how hard they try, I don't think they can stop it. These are simply computer programs. I think this is where the Chinese communists have trouble. In fact, I was on TV today with Epoch Times talking about the fact that the Chinese government cannot stop this, because no matter how your surveillance works, unless you're willing to go stop every computer in the world, you can't stop a blockchain. And so I think governments are going to have to ultimately make friends with the blockchain. And try to do it on the up and up. And I think we're not going to try to cheat. We don't do that. But what we're going to try to do is be reasonable and have people have a good experience in this ecosystem where we provide capital and financial services and HR services and accounting services and much more. So we provide the tools the businesses need to thrive in a way that they can do it in a frictionless fashion. And I think that's beneficial. And if the government eventually catches up with it, great. we'll have 30 million small businesses say, what are you doing? You can't stop this.
Yeah, the blockchain's bigger than any country. That's the problem.
By a lot, yeah.
Like, I mean, if you think about it, because these whales that are on the blockchain are either like Michael Saylor, for instance, the Bitcoin, the Bitcoin maxi that's the most famous, who takes a lot of heat when Bitcoin goes down and then looks like a genius when it goes up. But, you know, I mean, like, if the government tried to impose its will on him, he'd go, okay, I'm leaving the country now. Goodbye. it would be that simple.
You get into a real ethereal discussion here of the whole concept of a nation state.
Right.
And those borders are breaking down very rapidly. And again, I think it's almost going to become old school that people think in terms of nation states when more we think in terms of communities and DAOs that are built in the blockchain.
Yeah. And so a DAO is that.
I don't know. Arizona's taking its border. I was going to say, Arizona's taking its border seriously. They're stacking up shipping containers where there's still gaps in the wall.
True.
Well, clearly they've got an idea there to keep the current status quo, you know, going. I'm simply referring to the reality that since we've crawled out of a cave, we've been aggregating ever since, whether it was to a township, a community, a city, a state, a nation, and now to regions. I think that if you look at it kind of on a long-term, non-biased basis, you end up saying these nation states are a thing of the past.
Hmm. That sounds like something that would tickle the fancy of the globalists, though, in a way. What do you think? How do you relate it to that whole debate?
I think many of the globalists simply see that as a natural outcome. You know, in many ways, we are one world. I think when we had the Apollo rockets go up, we saw that, right? When we send space stations up, we see it. And I think it doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think we as free people need to understand that the establishment of that global order, if that's what it comes to, if it's democratized through the blockchain, is not a bad thing.
Well, I agree with that.
And that's where Steve and I were talking about this afternoon.
This harkens to our little conversation earlier, Timothy. Like, I get it now.
Well, I actually
agree with Steve. But unfortunately, when they sort of push towards globalism, it's coming with this huge other shadow called tyranny. And that's the problem. So if they could somehow divorce that shadow from it, I would be all for it. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to highlight for people what Steve said at the end there. Democratizing it through the blockchain is the key. Because he and I were talking, it's like, and who's responsible? Whose fault is it that 90% of the products at Walmart are from China? It's our fault. It's the consumer's fault because we don't want to pay $2 for something we can pay $1 for. So it's upon us, if we really want America to be first, it's upon us to elect politicians that reflect our values and will enforce our will. It's on us to support manufacturers and retailers that make products that help our local community. And I think what Steve just said about blockchain democratizing the globalist aggregation that people see as inevitable, I think that's the key to preventing the tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think it's the only way to do it. And I think if you look at the theoretical papers written over the years on the idea of a one world government, they never presumed that we, again, free people, would come up with a way to make it fully democratic. And I don't think you can stop it. I don't think they can run an economy from a centralized basis when we have a way that we offer to totally decentralize it. I think that at the end of the day, we win that. And that's where I'm not afraid, because I think we win in the end.
Yeah, it's interesting the way people are responding to it on artistic levels with the decentralization. Like, if a collection comes out, then immediately there's a copycat collection that comes out. There's not the typical rules of copying. It's like, it's a free-for-all in a lot of ways. It's really interesting to behold. Now, what's some of the other things you're offering with the, can you like give us a sort of breakdown of all that you're offering to small businesses? Like, if I was a small business and trying to figure out if I wanted to join this, what would you say to me?
Well, absolutely. And the first thing we would say is that you need education. So Elever has the Elever Institute for Advanced Business Studies. We provide business education, everything from how to build a plan, how to build metrics, how to understand all of that. We then have Elever Capital to provide capital that businesses need. We have Elever Accounting to provide accounting, Elever Payroll, Elever Insurance. We have like 15 services, all of which are critical to the small business that can be accessed through the club, first on a highly discounted basis, so we save them money, but also then as we go forward into this fully smart contract-based economy.
That's really interesting. How did you come up with this concept, and how long has it taken you to develop, and how big is your team? Because this is enormous in scope.
Well, I got a lot of fun questions there. This thing's been rolling around in my head for a good 10 years. I gave a speech long ago when I talked about the post-capitalist economy, and I couldn't crystallize in my head what it looked like. I simultaneously was looking at something called Second Life, which was one of the earlier sim games. And I started thinking about how these played together. And then obviously I've been watching Bitcoin since 2008. And I was watching how the blockchain was building around that. So about 4 years ago, I started putting together a longer term plan, and I started building these companies in the real world, like capital, like HR, payment processing, banking, all that stuff. I put that together as a kind of a tangible ecosystem, if you will. And it's been now in the last year that technology has gotten to the point where I think we can pull the trigger on the digital side on a massive scale. So we're in the process of that. And then in terms of the company itself, we're probably in aggregate a little over 20 people at this point, but we outsource what we need and we partner with people where we need it. So, for example, in our capital company, we partner with the nation's largest savings and loan, U.S. Alliance Credit Union. So they backstop us there to help us with both personnel and capital. So we have a lot of relationships that support us in our endeavor. In terms of the technological build, we have a brilliant group of programmers out of Boca Raton and around the world, frankly. But we think we can pull this off this time, and we're on a march to do it.
And when do you think you'll launch this?
We've launched all of it now except for the tokenization. So when you look at the DAO itself, that we expect to launch in January.
And so my understanding of a DAO is just like, you know, if the main company buys investment property, then everyone participates in that investment. Is that sort of the long and the short of it?
Yes, except for the fact that there's no main company. The DAO is of itself. So
right.
Let's say
so
we have 10,000, right? We have 10,000 members in our DAO. They each own a vote on how the DAO is managed proportionate to the number of tokens they own.
And will this exist?
Just so people understand, a DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about a DAO.
Correct. Not the Dow Jones Industrial 30, right?
Right. Yeah. And just wanted to make that clear for listeners.
That's actually a very good point, though, because I do get confusion on that. But think about Uber. They're kind of a DAO in and of themselves. They're managed by an app. They don't really have management like we think of it.
Yeah. Well, Bitcoin in and of itself is that. Like the guy who invented it disappeared, and nobody can ever change it. And so that's why Michael Saylor considers it the greatest store of value that's ever existed. And there's a lot of good arguments for that. You know, for instance, if you were trying to move like $1 million worth of gold from America to China or China to America, you would take a plane and enormous amounts of money and people to do that. Whereas with Bitcoin, you could just press a button and for a dollar in gas or probably 10, whatever, you could move it. So, it sounds great.
We're trying to build a frictionless economy. And so everywhere we see friction, we want it to go away. You look at, for example, investment banking. As we build the community larger and larger, when other companies say, hey, we need to raise money, we'll go right to the community and say, let's raise it. It will be a completely internal operation. So the notion of an investment banker is just gone.
That's amazing. Okay, so where do people find it? We're rounding to the last minute of the interview. So tell people where to find you and how to get acquainted with this more.
they need to stop into elevareclub.com, ELEVARE club.com. And that's where they can get a hold of our catalog and suite of services. They can fill out a form to talk to one of our concierge. All of our members are appointed with a personal concierge to help walk them through this thing. But we welcome them to come and join us on a mission that will transform the nature of small in a big way.
I'm going to check it out myself. Steve Beeman, thank you for coming on. That was fascinating. And Timothy Shea, as always, my friend, thanks for coming on. This has been great. And I also wanted to know, is this going to actually exist in the metaverse in terms of, are you guys having land in there? But there's 30 seconds left, so I don't know. Maybe we'll have to
have
you back
on. And the answer is yes, we will have retail store space available eventually where our retailers can buy space. We have office space for attorneys. We have office space for people.
Gotta go.
So it's all there.
Gotta go, you guys. All right. Take care, y'all. And keep listening, everybody. We'll be right back with more on TNT.